My name is Lily. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Pawikan, 1 hour of Philippine radio where we find out about Filipino culture and everything in between and what that means. Thanks for tuning in to 97.5 MHz. This is Radio Laura. Stay tuned.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Pawikan, the only Filipino radio show in Zurich. Today we'll be listening to a recording from an event this previous weekend organized by the women's organization Gabriela Switzerland. Originally, the environmental activists Jed Tamano and Janila Castro were supposed to talk about their activism and their experience last year when they were kidnapped by military forces and coerced into lying about being surrenderees of the New People's Army. However, they were unable to leave the country due to an ongoing case against them. In their place, we talked to the human rights lawyer Maria Sol Taule, the director of the Center for Environmental Concerns, Lia May Torres, and the clergywoman Reverend Glofi Baluntong, who faced trumped-up charges herself for standing with indigenous people.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, I'm Sol. Actually, if you're wondering why we're here, we try our best to be here at least once a year, every sessions of the Human Rights Council. We bring victims of human rights violations in the Philippines. Right now, we are with Pastor Glofi. She will tell you more about her story, but maybe just an overview. She was charged with violation of the anti-terrorism law. Essentially, she is being accused of being a terrorist in the Philippines. While it is surprising, but really not... It's usual that, you know, activists and human rights defenders are being, you know, we call it red tagging, or we've been associated with communist terrorist groups, and they do not differentiate a communist from a terrorist. They put it in one basket, so we are all terrorists in the Philippines. So we are here to attend the Human Rights Council 55th sessions because, you know, the Philippine government is going around, especially in UN, talking to diplomatic missions, saying that the human rights situation in the Philippines is better under the current administration of President Marcos Jr. But of course, we, you know, activists and human rights defenders on the ground will prove that, of course, it's not true. In fact, the violations increase, and the policies which have been carried out by the former president, Rodrigo Duterte, I'm sure you know him very well. She's very infamous for his drug war policy in the Philippines. President Marcos Jr. continued the policies in his administration. So which means the killings, the abductions, the filing of trumped-up cases also continue. So I think that's the brief background why we're here now. We will be staying until today. We've arrived when? Yesterday, Friday night, and we will be staying in Geneva until the 15th of March to do the talking with missions. Just probably also, it's good to know that in 2020, because of this heightened human rights violations in the Philippines, Iceland, who's then a member of the Human Rights Council, issued a resolution to investigate the Philippines. But what was approved was mere technical cooperation and capacity building. So many civil society organizations are demanding for an independent investigation. But what was made was a mere technical cooperation and capacity building. So that means, you know, informing the police how to respect human rights. But of course, they would not do that because as long as the policies are in place, there will not be significant, you know, changes on the ground. So that's our problem today. And now that joint program will be ending in June this year, and after 3 years of being in place, there's really no substantial policy changes in the Philippines. So we are hoping, although of course the issues in the Philippines are not somehow not in the radar of the Human Rights Council compared to issues in Palestine and other countries in the world, but we hope that we will be heard by the missions that we talk to in Geneva. So that's a quick background. Of course, we are supposed to travel here, and I know you expect them. Maybe Leah can explain later why they are not here with us, but just an overview. They have their visas already. Jed and Janila are two young environmental defenders who were abducted last year. They are supposed to tell their stories in front of you. They already secured their visas, but they were charged with another case after their abduction. So they are continuously being harassed in the Philippines. They have to seek sanctuary in various places because they are still under surveillance by the Philippine military. So maybe Leah can explain to you and tell you the story of the two very brave women environmental defenders. You want to add to the background, or because maybe if you have questions, you can. We have a time later. Yep. Okay.
Although, or feel free to. Okay, lang
sinyo. Yeah. Yes. Sure. Yes. Maybe we.
Feel free to make questions in the middle of the.
Yes, I mean the any interactive discussion will be good rather than, you know, very structured type of forum. So yes, for those who are not much familiar with the Philippines, are we turning on the lights? Okay. Okay. Right now, since the elections in 2022, of course, we've tried very hard to oppose the candidacy of the son of the dictator, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. He won by landslide electoral fraud using advanced technology. So he replaced Rodrigo Duterte. The Marcoses are well known for their hidden wealth here, hidden in Zurich, in all of the banks here. So they've siphoned millions or billions of dollars of money at the expense of the starving Filipino people in the Philippines. So 3 decades after, they are now back in power and trying to reconstruct the image of the Marcoses. So that's really sad, no? In the Philippines. But of course, we continue to struggle against the Marcoses. They're trying to, of course, change their image, that they are, especially now that the young Marcos is in power, the son, he's trying to deodorize the image of the Marcoses. That, you know, diplomatic missions that we talked to, they said that, and other organizations would say that, of course, Marcos Jr. would paint himself to be better than Duterte because anything, the bar is so low that anything after Duterte is a good president. So that's it. And of course, maybe President Marcos Jr. is, you know, knows how to play words because Duterte used to curse in front of the public, doesn't care about the international community and or what they have to say. But Marcos knows how to play with it in the UN and, you know, talking to diplomatic the diplomatic community. So we are really here to belie all that Marcos has said to them, especially about human rights. Now, have you been to the... How many of you have been to the Philippines? Okay. I mean, you could witness how impoverished the country is. But it's because, you know, we've been... the oligarchs and politicians have taken advantage of this kind of system for a long time. And if you would observe many of the politicians now sitting or incumbent as either senators or congressmen are really from landlords, families, big corporations. And, you know, but, you know, the quality of living of the common Filipino folks remain the same. I mean, we have a very, I could not say that's a living wage. It's not even a living wage. It's very low wage that could not even feed a family of six. So it's really hard. And migration of Filipinos to, you know, the Middle East continues to grow every year. So in the Philippines also, of course, because of that kind of situation, there are many organizations from the different sector, fisher folks, farmers, indigenous peoples of whose lands were encroached by mining companies. Women, of course, youth, and many others struggle, no, to have a better society in the Philippines. But the consequence of which is red tagging from the military and state forces. We have this interagency task force that was called National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict that was aimed to crack down against people like us. So it's a common thing that even beauty queens who are, you know, vocal about women's rights will be called a friend of terrorists or communists. So if you know Catriona Gray, the Miss Universe, she was red tagged by the state forces. So as shallow as that, you know. So, I mean, the purpose is to silence people, not to, you know, stand up for their rights. But oftentimes, these red tagging are not, you know, just harmless rhetorics, but most often this translates to graver violations on the ground. Most of our colleagues who are red tag are actually charged with cases of violation of anti-terror law. Sister Emma here was charged with arson. Allegedly, she burned a military camp in a far-flung area in the Philippines, in a province. Many are also abducted. The two young women rights defenders who are supposed to be here, which were alleged to be, you know, associated with the communist revolutionary group in the Philippines. So there's a lot of cases that we can mention about the effects of red tagging, but the ultimate probably result of that is the killings of human rights workers and human rights defenders in the Philippines. There are a lot now. There are 89 cases of extrajudicial killings under the current presidency of Marcos Jr., which does not include the drug war killings, because you know the drug war killings continue still. So those 89 are mostly civilians, activists, and human rights workers in the Philippines. We also have documented cases of abduction, 13 in the time of President Marcos, which is relatively high than the presidency of Duterte. So we also have hundreds of thousands of forced evacuation in the countryside, because these areas are highly militarized. They bomb the entire communities because they suspect that rebels are, you know, hiding in those areas. So once they bomb the communities, sometimes they include white phosphorus that affect the source of water and, you know, the livelihood of the people there. They're forced to go down from the mountains and seek refuge in the lowlands. So they are uprooted from their families and from their livelihood. And that's, that results to more and more violations. So this kind of militarization continues until now because of the counterinsurgency program of the Philippine government. So if you will ask me if it's better, because, you know, that's what most people tell us. Is it better now under the presidency of Marcos? I would really say it's not. It's really not. Apart from that, maybe many activists are now in jail. We have documented around 800 political prisoners which are, you know, detained all over the Philippines. The most common type of arrest of activists in the Philippines is that they barge in your house in the middle of the night. And of course, you know, in the Philippines, it's not common that you have CCTVs inside your house, unlike maybe in some places here. So they will barge into your house, go inside very quickly, and plant firearms and explosives to support the claim that you are a terrorist and harboring firearms, high-powered firearms, and grenades. So sometimes the stories are really ridiculous that I know if you're a judge, you will not believe it. They say, the police would say, or the military would say, the grenades were kept under the pillow. I mean, who in the right mind would, you know, keep a grenade in the pillow while you were sleeping, right? Or in the bathroom or under the sink, or a long firearm in your closet. Who would do that? So it's really ridiculous, but this kind of charges are being slapped against activists because the primary purpose is to, you know, for them to not avail bail, because these charges are non-bailable, and, you know, to put them behind bars to stop their work, their activism. So that's what's happening in the Philippines right now. And in the middle of that, again, we have the anti-terror law, which was in the middle of the pandemic in 2020, instead of, you know, prioritizing the needs of people, especially the medical needs of the people. The Congress, Philippine Congress, passed the anti-terrorism law in 2020 during the lockdown. So we opposed that. We filed 47 petitions before the Supreme Court because, you know why? There's really a vague definition of terrorism. So if there is really a big possibility that if you are against some policies of the government, they can easily tag you as a terrorist. So it's really dangerous. And what is more dangerous is that it allows detention up to 14 days and extendable to another 10 days without charges. So, I mean, you will be in prison for at least 24 days without charges, and God knows what, you know, the police can do to you. I mean, if you're in the hands of the police for just 10 minutes, they can just kill you. What more in 24 days that they could torture you, right? So those are the kinds of, things that we wanted the Philippine Supreme Court to give attention to. Because without the anti-terror law, it's happening already. What more if there's anti-terrorism law which legalizes these things? So now, What else? Of course, what we would really like to tell you is that what can you do to help us amplify the issues of the Philippines? Maybe we would really want you to probably issue statements and keep track and monitor what's happening in our country. I know there's a lot of things happening around the world, but you know our struggles are not different from each other. If bombings are happening in Gaza, it's happening also in the Philippines. And almost always, poor people, oppressed people are victims of these kinds of state attacks. So I hope that you will continue to help us, keep track of what's happening to our country and tell the stories, of course, to other people that you meet. So that would be a big help for us. And I think, Leah, are you ready to... Is it Leah or Pastor Glofi? Do you want to... I think just to give you a first-hand account of the situation of human rights workers in the Philippines, I will give you Pastor Glofi. She is from the United Methodist Church in the Philippines. And again, she will tell you why she was considered as terrorist by the Philippine government.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good afternoon, all. I am a clergy. Imagine a clergy being a terrorist. Anyway, there's a nun.
a nun there.
So, let me tell you about what we do as a church, as a United Methodist. We were active in our social justice ministries. We work hand in hand with the, in our case in Mindoro, with the Mangyan in the area. It's the indigenous people in the area that experience discrimination. The indigenous people in Mindoro experience discrimination. They are being displaced from their communities because of mining activities, because of building dams. But they experience this discrimination and impoverishment. Basically, since our church is there, we work hand in hand with them, especially in assisting them in their during times of when their rights are being violated. We help them in referrals to lawyers like Attorney Sol. We help them in finding their loved ones who are abducted because of the military, by the way, of the Philippine military. And we help them in documenting their cases. We also prioritize, as a church, we prioritize giving humanitarian aid to people in the interiors of the island, because they were the ones that usually didn't receive much, especially during disaster. And state agents, they identify themselves as agents of the National Task Force to End Local Government, local communist armed conflict. It's the arm of the government that persecute those the activists and humanitarian workers and human rights defenders. So they identify themselves as such. NTF agent of NTF-ELCAC. And they usually question us, why are we giving reliefs to Mangyans? Why are we organizing youth in Mangyan areas? Why are we teaching them literacy and numeracy in the areas? And there's this one time that we have families of dead New People's Army that they were coming, that they came to get the bodies of their loved ones, and the families and the HR group, the rights group, do not have, place to stay, safer place to stay. So of course, as church, they think and they feel that the church is the safest place for them to stay during that time, and they went to our church. Of course, we accepted them because it's our role as a church to sanctuary people who are seeking help. And so by that, the red tagging, the threat, the surveillance to our church, specifically to me as the district superintendent of the church, intensify. So that was 2019. After a year, I was charged falsely with attempted murder. I supposed to gun down military men, but that's what I say. It's a false charge. It's a false criminal charge, because when they say I committed that crime, I was doing a funeral service to one of my church members. So that's a trump-up charge that many activists, many human rights defenders, many organizations airing their grievances and criticizing the government is experiencing. And so that's one case. After a year, I was again charged with violation of anti-terror law. This is the law that Attorney Sol is sharing just a moment ago. So we as a church are not spared in this kind of oppression from the government. But of course, we are not persecuted because we are church. We are persecuted because we journey with the plight of the people. There are many churches who are sitting pretty. No, they are not being threatened, and they are not being tagged as our churches that really walked and journey with the people, with the people. And so as church people, as a church worker, as a clergy, we are calling and we are also asking for your support for the call to defend the human rights defenders and all the people that experiencing this kind of oppression from the government that's supposed to uphold its duty to protect. And so this is my experience. By the way, I'm 54 years old. I'm not that young anymore. So, but no one is spared in this kind of persecution from the government.
Thank you, Pastora. To be honest, I don't, as a lawyer, I don't mind being tagged as a communist lawyer, as long as, I mean, you know, yeah. Maybe they can say whatever they want. But the thing is that when they accuse you of things that you are not, like a terrorist, many of our colleagues, even lawyers, are already killed. They've been gunned down, and the perpetrators are out there. So in the Philippines, impunity is really serious, that none of these people who committed these crimes were prosecuted. We filed several cases against government officials, but not one finger was lifted to proceed with those kinds of cases. So it's really sad. But again, if it's a reward, as you may call it, the things that are happening to us now.